There are a fair number of people, websites, books, and broadcast shows exhorting you to be your best self. And we'll get into that territory in this hour, but through a very personal story. Our guest, Matthew Reynolds, taught high school students for a number of years in the Rogue Valley. He tells the story of the challenges he faced in life and how other people can follow the pathway in the new book, Biggest, Fullest, Brightest, Shifting the Consciousness of Humanity. Matthew taught for quite a few years at Crater High School in Central Point. He's now an equity consultant and a self-identified warrior for justice. He's been a guest on the Jefferson Exchange in the past, including a session on culturally responsive teaching, you know, the other CRT. Matthew Reynolds, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Jeffrey, good morning, my friend. Thank you so much for having me back.
It was good to visit with you. And where are you now? You're in a different time zone, even.
I am in a different time zone. I'm coming from, or coming to you from, the big island of Hawaii. I live in Volcano Village, letting myself breathe and be my biggest, fullest, and brightest.
So I was going to ask you, the move seems very much in line with what you write about in the book.
Yes, it definitely is. Well, in line in the sense that I was fortunate enough to have some dear friends here who recognized that I needed a bit of healing. And so they were like, hey, come on over. Got a place for you. And I took them up on it. And I've been here healing. And in that time, I wrote this book along with getting my equity consulting off and running and visiting lots of other places, not just the Rogue Valley, to help people become their biggest, fullest, and brightest.
So I'm not just blowing smoke when I say that from our earliest communications through things like First Friday Arts when you were still at Crater, that you've been one of the most consistently up people I've ever met through this job. And yet we find out from the book you've had quite a few obstacles. So how were you able to get to a place of being as upbeat as you have been?
Upbeat. Interesting. I feel that, thank you, Jeffrey, for saying that first and foremost. And I don't see it as blowing smoke in any way, shape, or form. I think once I started recognizing my authentic self and seeing my authentic self wanting to be in this world, be in this time, be in this existence, that's where the upbeatness, for lack of a better word at this point, I think started to really come to the surface. It's this idea of, hey, asking myself, which I ask others now a lot, is how much of your thinking is your thinking? And when I really started to dive into the answers of that question, I started seeing and realizing that I had put this facade up front, that I wasn't truly being authentic to who I was. And that a lot of times we, the greater we of humanity, are looking to put a front on to make it seem a particular way because we've been taught or told that experiencing a range of emotions was not good, was considered wrong or bad, was placed in a binary, right, of good or bad, right or wrong. And now once I started embracing all of that more and really letting myself be fully realized, allowing myself to truly be all of those things and not putting that good or bad on it, but really just recognizing that I'm a human being and I've got this range of emotions and it's a beautiful thing and I should be embracing that more and really allowing myself to go through all of that. And that's where I think the upbeatness that you speak of comes from, Jeffrey.
Is upbeat not a great term? I mean, because it does sort of provide a value judgment on positivity or negativity, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And I think that's why I'm smiling when I say it, why I'm saying what I'm saying, is I think that it comes from this idea of being upbeat, being able to come to my truth and be able to embrace those aspects of my truth. That, for me, is something that it's like, this is living life. This is being alive. And a lot of times we have those initial responses of something that has occurred that maybe I've used in the past to put a yoke of shame around my neck and weigh me down, right? So that my shoulders are stooped and everything is kind of closed in. And as long as I'm learning and growing from that, it's something that is real. And it's positive. And to me, embracing that learning, embracing those fail, first attempt in learning, and allowing myself to truly feel my way into my existence, there's so many things out there now that are dehumanizing, that take away our humanity. And I'm for example, soft skills, right? Society has claimed soft skills, empathy, vulnerability, compassion, integrity, and other things as soft. But these are the very things that are humanity, right? It's the things that make us human that we should be embracing these skills and see them for the powerful skills they are and allow them to empower us instead of being shamed or guilted into having those emotions and that we should not have those emotions. So I'm not really going to put the kibosh on upbeat. It's a word that you chose for your lived experience and for your truth, Jeffrey, and our interactions. And I love that you caught on to that and asked me that question, because I think that it's a great lead into becoming our biggest, fullest, and brightest.
So just some of the concepts, you touched on them already. First attempt in learning, fail, and how much of your thinking is your thinking. I want to get to those, absolutely. We're getting close to a break, though, and before we get there, I just want to ask about the preface from Brittany Zwirn, a fellow teacher who you worked with. She said that at her first job, she saw a lot of frustrated and disappointed students, except yours. So you've already been exhorting people to be their biggest, fullest, brightest for quite some time, haven't you?
Yes, and it comes from that lived experience. It comes from looking at my past and really allowing myself to heal there and looking at my past as an education and not a place to get trapped. And so when I say the past is our education, it's allowed me to go back and look at some of these experiences that I've had that have inflicted trauma or where I've ingested somebody else's personal work because my cognitive brain wasn't at a place to say no and that I'm not going to accept your personal work that you're exuding upon me through harsh language, through physical violence, through, you know, all these other aspects. And so, you know, when Brittany and I collaborated and came together and started to really work with one another in the education world, those are some of the things that she was talking about that she was seeing was me being at a place in my life where I didn't want to inflict upon my students the things that I had gone through.
Okay, well, hold the thought there. We'll come back. Yep. Biggest, fullest, brightest with Matthew Reynolds back in the Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, our guest is Matthew Reynolds, who taught for quite a long time in the Central Point School District just north of Medford. That's how we got to know him years ago. He's now an equity consultant and a self-identified warrior for justice, has left the Rogue Valley and is now living in Hawaii, and he's written a book about healing and getting to a better place in your life. It is called Biggest, Fullest, Brightest, Shifting the Consciousness of Humanity, and it's a conversation you are welcome to join on the Exchange as we talk about this. It's part self-help book, part memoir. He tells a lot about himself, but as a guide, perhaps, for the rest of us to follow. You can join in at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So back to Brittany Zwirn, who wrote the preface for the book, worked with you as a teacher, remarked upon how enthusiastic and engaged your students seemed to be. But were you engaging them in ways that ultimately didn't feel true to you, or was it not appreciated? What are you telling us here now?
Yeah, it's. I think what I'm trying to say and get at is that for myself, there was a lot of looking towards that past as an education, and realizing as I was teaching that I was seeing my students as these tiny little mirrors, right, that were reflecting back upon me these moments in time when I was ingesting supremacy culture, ingesting the status quo's ideas of who I should be and what I should be in the world. And there was very seldom moments of me truly finding myself. It was always to make other people comfortable or to make other people laugh and not necessarily deal with my own emotions that were coming up for me. And so I wanted to have an authentic space, not just a safe space, not just a brave space, but an authentic space for my students to really be who they were going to be, which sometimes didn't match up with what the rest of society was telling them. And then the more and more that I was in the system, the more and more I started to see that there was a lot of aspects of the educational system that is actually hurtful and harmful towards our youth. And for me, I personally couldn't be in that system anymore, and I needed to find another way to help the next seven generations become their biggest, fullest, and brightest, and at the same time continue my own learning of who I am and where I'm at. And Brittany Zwarn was like a huge proponent in that. She really helped me sit down. I gave her, in the book itself, I gave her co-author kudos, because she really helped pull a lot of the ideas out of me, helped structure the chapters, helped me to really talk through some of the ideas that I had, and like helped record those things. So she's been a driving force throughout the creation of this book. And her and I are actually teaming up to write another book that we'll hopefully see within the next year or two.
So the essence, I think, of what you were just talking about, though, is that, you know, the truth will make you free, but first it will make you miserable.
Well, if you let misery be miserable and let it be something that's going to hold you down, then it is misery and it is miserable. If you have these emotions that when you first are in the situation and it causes discomfort and it causes anger and other emotions, those are real. Those are the things that help us to be human and to not discredit them for what they are. And in the same breath, not let them hold you down. Kind of thing. We need to experience them. I don't feel that we need to go to the extent that some things take us, as far as like assault or abuse in those particular ways, or gaslighting, or the dehumanizing ways, oppressive ways that a lot of systemic racism and other systems within our culture do. I don't think that we need to have those. I think that when I talk about shifting the consciousness of humanity, I'm talking about getting to a place where we recognize and realize that a lot of the systems that are around us, a lot of the things that the United States is built upon, is the oppression of other people. This idea, this stratified idea that there's somebody who's superior to somebody else. And I want us to be in that circle, you know, from the theater, my theater background and other aspects out there, other cultures out there, being in a circle and being able to see each other's reactions and faces and give energy throughout that infinite circle, right, is something that I think humanity is lacking. I think that the status quo and supremacy culture has actually taken humanity and pushed it off to the side, because it's all about amassing wealth. It's all about greed. It's all about the divide and conquer. You got to be winning. You got to, success is this ladder that you've got to climb. But when we look up that ladder, it's so minimal. It's just this pinpoint from point A to point B, when if we look at what the universe itself is doing, how it's expanding in all these different directions, why can't we do that as human beings?
Matthew Reynolds is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Biggest, Fullest, Brightest, Shifting the Consciousness of Humanity. You know, you mentioned the circle. We have talked about some other shapes here, but ultimately the cover of the book is a spiral, and you talk about the taking the journey in a spiral. Explain the symbolism.
Yes. Spirals come from, my first connection with those comes from dance and being a dancer. And so within our bodies, there's spirals. If we take our leg and from our hip socket and be able to, you know, turn it in and out, back and forth, you know, move our entire leg in that way, it's a spiral that gets us, projects us, locomotes us. And depending on your body and your abilities, et cetera, there are spirals throughout the entire body. So this idea of a spiral goes back to what you were saying of placing things only on a binary, good or bad, right or wrong. But if we allow ourselves the center of the spiral, where we feel grounded, where we feel most authentically ourselves, and knowing that that spiral is going to slowly move us out as we have lived experiences, sometimes knock us off of our feet, and we're just kind of holding on with our fingertips, then we recognize that we will make it back to the center. We just need to find those tools, create those tools for ourselves out of our lived experience, maybe listening to others and their lived experience and their truth, helps us not feel so alone and helps us get back to that state of groundedness. But it's not to stay there. We are learning throughout that whole time that we're spiraling out, and to be able to embrace that learning instead of being overwhelmed by that learning or pushing that learning down or pushing it away and trying to only, you know, put ourselves in this fantasy world of being grounded when in all actuality we're not.
You tell us that you were knocked out of the center of your spiral quite a few times in your life. And as you reveal, your parents had to endure their own trials just in getting together. I mean, this led to some bumpy moments, certainly, in your upbringing.
Most definitely. My parents met about 10 years before the Loving versus Virginia Supreme Court decision about interracial marriage. My mother was Irish, German, and Swedish. My father was second generation out of slavery, African-American from Montgomery, Alabama. And so them meeting, my mother was kicked out of her family for dating my father. And they were part of the mass migration out of the South and into other places of the country. And they ended up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I was born. So, and then there were some trials that happened there. And we went even further north, about an hour north, to a small town called Isanti, Minnesota. And my parents thought that would be a good idea. And it necessarily wasn't a great idea. And there was a lot of trials that I went through at that point that, you know, at the time I was ingesting and taking in, and it really attacked my self-worth, my dignity, my way of perceiving myself as anything other than just kind of the jokester and the always making everybody else laugh kind of thing, to deal with a lot of that stuff. And so those are some of the lessons that really helped formulate the way in which I moved through the classroom, created the classroom, invited my students in, was part of the classroom, and then moving that out and what I learned there into what I share now, and crafting your equity lens and helping people go through my 3-day workshop to be able to craft a tool for they themselves, out of their own lived experiences, to be able to shift this consciousness of humanity.
You write in the book about thinking you'd find your tribe in college, but that was a bit of a mixed experience. And so clearly from a couple of different angles, there's pressure on any human being, but a lot on you in particular, as you report, for what you were, for who you were, and ultimately challenges to be your own true self. I mean, it's been hard, particularly in this country, hasn't it?
It's been something that more and more as I'm getting older, I'm really starting, as I said, to embrace it as my education, right? To really look at those things as a way to educate the ways that I want to treat others, the ways that I want to be treated, to really give myself a lesson in giving myself grace and giving other people grace. And I think that there's a lot of trials and tribulations in the United States that don't need to be there. Going back to what I was saying a little bit before about the oppression of peoples, it seems like if we really start to look around, if we craft our equity lens and start looking at the United States, there's a lot of aspects of it that are just based on the oppression of other people instead of actually inspiring, empowering people to be their biggest, fullest, and brightest. You know, we talk a good rap about money and wealth and all these other things, but that's not humanity to me. That's not what being human is all about. If we all had our creature comforts filled, if we had food, shelter, water, clothing, basic health care taken care of, right? And I know a lot of people out there may be jumping to a socialist mindset or whatever. I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about our basic needs, what we need as a human being to live. If those things were met, right, if we had those things that were taken care of and we didn't have to work 80 hours a week to provide those things for ourselves or for our families, then what could we become? And that's what I want to see. I want to see that shift in the consciousness of humanity so that all of humanity can become its biggest, fullest, and brightest. It's not a utopian idea. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that there are certain things, powers that be, that have created these ideas of power, created these constructs of white and whiteness, and they keep leveraging those to keep a particular group of people amassing wealth and another group of people poor.
We are talking to Matthew Reynolds here on the Jefferson Exchange. We got to know Matt when he was still teaching at Crater High School in Central Point and has moved on. He now lives in Hawaii, works as an equity consultant and self-identified warrior for justice. He's the author of a book called Biggest, Fullest, Brightest, Shifting the Consciousness of Humanity. And you are welcome to join the conversation about the concepts we're talking about here and how to implement them. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I want to return to one of the central concepts of the book, which is one that at first glance kind of stops you cold. You asking the question, how much of your thinking is your thinking? That's an analysis all of us could stand to do on a pretty regular basis, I would think.
Yeah, it's so Jeffrey, when you heard it and when you read it and you say that it stops you cold, what came up for you?
You know, the kinds of things where you have to say, well, wait a minute, where did I get these concepts from? You know, who did I think, oh, well, they're right. I'll just go sort of follow their pathway instead of occasionally stepping back and thinking, wait a minute, how much of this comes from me?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then let's add another layer on it and take it just out of the brain for a second. I know I ask how much of your thinking is your thinking, but let's drop that into our heart, right? And when we think about just our basic feeling towards ourselves and our own humanity, and the feeling towards others and their humanity, when I ask myself how much of my thinking is my thinking, have I created a singular story? So we're talking about stereotypes and prejudices and bias, right? I've created these single stories about these groups of people, and then it's like, well, wait, I don't want to be othered. I don't want to be placed in a group like that. It doesn't feel good, makes my stomach upset, makes me angry at times, makes me frustrated, makes me really depressed and sad in other moments. So why would I want to put that on anybody else? And then when I really look at it, it's like, in my heart of hearts, I don't want to do that. That's not humane. That's not what, to me, humanity is all about. Do I have all the definitions of it? No, but I know for sure what I don't want to be, and that is creating these singular stories. So then I started thinking how much of my thinking is my thinking and started realizing how I had been indoctrinated or how I had ingested these other ideas of what the ways in which I see humanity, which then later on in my studies and looking for answers to some of this, I found Dr. Joy DeGruy and her work. I found some other folks, Resma Minicum, Edgar Villanueva, Decolonizing Wealth, and I started realizing I've internalized my racial oppressions. I've also internalized this idea of superiority. I've internalized capitalism. I've internalized these things, and now they're just functioning and happening in a knee-jerk response. They're reacting to the world around me, and I'm not really living in that world. I'm moving through it and reacting to everything, and I don't want to live my life that way. I do not subscribe to that ideology, and so I'm shifting it.
Was your response up until recently to just sort of push through and, you know, I'm gonna beat this. I'm gonna beat the forces that are arrayed against me?
Because that's what we're taught, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Dr. Brené Brown, I armored myself. I put up these big thick walls, you know, and said, no, I'm not gonna let you in, and I'm gonna try to hold these things in. But then is that living as well? If I'm completely armored and have this thick armor around me with most people, and that, to me, my answer is no. I don't feel like that's living. Why are we still answering some of our world's problems with violence? going to Buffalo,
yeah.
Right? Why are we so entrenched within this armor, within this singular way of thinking, that we feel that taking somebody else's life is the only way that we can answer that? And I don't want to subscribe to that ideology. I don't feel that violence is the way that we need to move forward. We need to move forward by embracing those skills that are all about empowerment and all about being powerful, empathy, compassion, vulnerability, integrity. I want us to feel those deeply and move humanity into this expansion. I want us to expand out, not grow at a level this level, next level, higher level. That's all hierarchical thinking. I want us to just truly be expansive. I want to see your humanity first and foremost. I don't want to think of that story, that singular idea of you. I want to see and feel the emotions that are going on with you. We talk about that there's empaths and empathetic people out there. I feel that all humans have that on a certain level if we allow ourselves to be.
Obviously, question your assumptions, challenge your thinking, ask if it's your own thinking. A lot of that all percolates to the top of biggest, fullest, brightest. Is this a solo journey? Do you do it with a group? Do you do it with a partner? How do you envision this, Matthew?
So through the work that I offer, crafting your equity lens, that personal journey, human connection is huge. We need to connect with one another. And so the solo journey is I statement, is owning how much of that thinking and what you are saying, own it. That this is, in this instance, in my history, I said this, I reacted this way, or I responded this way, or I did these things, because I'm not going to blame something else for that. I'm going to own what has been mine. I'm also, though, going to hold accountable the things within the world that have influenced why I responded and reacted the way that I did. And so to be able to be seen, be heard, be recognized, have my dignity, be all of those things. I hear the music in the background. Yeah. So I know we're going to a break. So I'm gonna hold that thought, and I'm gonna answer that more when we come back from our break.
Okay. Thanks for anticipating that. The book is called Biggest, Fullest, Brightest, Shifting the Consciousness of Humanity, the work of our friend Matthew Reynolds. You can join the conversation when we come back to The Exchange in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Matthew Reynolds. We knew for many years as a drama teacher at Crater High School in Central Point, has now moved on, is living and working in Hawaii, and is an equity consultant and a warrior for justice. He's also an author now with a book called Biggest, Fullest, Brightest, Shifting the Consciousness of Humanity. You can join the conversation on The Exchange, part memoir, part self-help book, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. And the question that led up to where we paused, Matthew, was about this is whether this is a solo journey or there are companions.
Yeah, I feel the more and more people open up to this concept, to this idea, when people start recognizing more and more within themselves that their thinking isn't necessarily theirs, and how to be more open to not only their own humanity but others. It's a journey for all of us. And I think that collectively we'll start making those connections and having those connections. It brings me to a comment that my mama used to always say, and that is, you have to love everybody, but you don't have to like them. So it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be inviting everybody to my house to have dinner, right? But it means I'm going to see, I love you enough to see your humanity first and foremost. I don't need to oppress you to become my biggest, fullest, and brightest. I don't need to say that there's any group that's lesser than me for me to feel empowered to be me. We can all be fully realized. We can all be our biggest, fullest, and brightest. And that's why when I say, again, the shifting of the consciousness of humanity, it's shifting towards something that's more humanity-led. How do I lead with humanity first and foremost? How do I create an education system that's leading with humanity first and foremost? How do I create my business, my company, the exchange of monies, the idea of art and what I'm putting out there from an artist's perspective? How do I lead with humanity first and foremost is the key to all of this. We can scrap the DEI, the IDEA, the JEDI, the IDED, et cetera, because all of that is becoming this huge industrial complex and is being infiltrated by supremacy culture and its ideas as well. And I think that if we just jump past all of that and go to being humanity-led, first and foremost, then we will really start to be liberated from these ideas of oppression, divide and conquer, and those things that hold back us being that biggest, fullest, and brightest.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that you had some sharp opinions about the equity, diversity, inclusion, or justice, equity, diversity, inclusion. You went through a bunch of acronyms there, but got some issues with that system, too, as a system, it sounds like.
Well, I think when we look at it, we're watching what white supremacy culture does. It slowly permeates anything and everything. I don't think there's a driving force behind it anymore. I think that it was supremacy culture was put into play, and then it just became this thing, and it just is rolling out of control and taking us down a very dangerous path. And I think we all see that path that it's taking us down, and it's really difficult to unearth some of these concepts. How much of your thinking is your thinking? If we've internalized it, and it's just become part of the way in which we live. There is no magic elixir. There is no catch-all, be-all phrase or anything that's going to fix any of it. As I invite people in the book, you have to do your work with a capital W. It's your personal work. I can't do your work for you. I've not lived your life. And we talk about being able to walk in each other's shoes. It's a nice entry point, but you'll never be able to walk in my shoes, nor would I want someone to go through some of the things that I have. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And so it's this idea of, yeah, how do we look at these things and see how supremacy culture is seeping back into it? Well, it's us. Us as individuals. We're the ones who put the energy into this mission statement, this vision statement, your strategic plan for your business, how you want to see these particular things. So for us to actually shift the culture around these things, we have to do our personal work. We have to look in the mirror and say, how much of your thinking is your thinking? How am I today holding somebody else back from being their biggest and fullest and brightest because of the systems, the policies and procedures that we've put in play? How am I causing harm and hurt to our youth because of the systems that we've put into play? So yeah, I've got some pretty sharp opinions about a lot of it. I do my best though to embrace it and give grace and give myself grace, but I'm not going to dampen my own personal emotions and how I feel. I'm going to honor them and I'm going to recognize them. And if I need to apologize in some situations, I will. If I don't, I won't.
You know, just a wild guess here that some people are probably flinching at the use of the term supremacy culture and thinking, well, I'm not a supremacist. It's like, well, no, but you do belong to a majority that can identify other people as other. So this is can be a really hard thing for straight white people to understand because they are generally not treated the way, for example, a gay black student is. How get them to shift focus, to shift their consciousness?
Well, and here's the thing. All of it is a construct, right? So as a gay black man, I've internalized supremacy culture. I've internalized the ideas and characteristics of whiteness and white. Those are, like I said, those are constructs. And a lot of people are placing them upon themselves because of their color of skin or whatever, that I am this. Well, we've all been, and this I got from Edgar Villanueva and Decolonizing Wealth, he calls it colonizer illness. That colonization, and when it happened, there's this illness that came out of it, and that this illness continues to make us all sick and make humanity sick. And so it's recognizing and not going, oh, I should feel shame or I'm angry about this. It's like, you can have those emotions, but now let's get beyond that. When we look at it from the perspective of humanity, and we look at it from your humanness, what of your humanness are you now saying is white or whiteness or supremacy culture? And so when you flinch at that, where does that come from? Again, how much of your thinking is your thinking? Why do you want to say I am that or I'm not that and build this wall? Because that idea, once everybody and the human brain, we all want to be good, right? But when do we take being the good guy to this negative place that we don't even see the harm that we're causing another human being, that we're not even seeing their humanity? I call it the double G, right? And it's part of the illness. We want to be so good all the time that we're not even recognizing what we might, our actions are saying or doing is actually causing harm to other people. How do we strip that back and actually do things for others instead of only doing them for ourselves. Our healing, yes, is for us as an individual, because that comes from our lived experience. But when am I blocking myself from allowing that healing? Because I'm looking at these constructs that are based on a lie, white and whiteness, and we're allowing those things to manipulate the ways in which I choose to treat other human beings. How do we heal that? That is where we need to be. So yeah, of course there are people out there who are reacting, responding, and flinching to the ways they are. I ask you to breathe deep. I ask you to ask yourself truthfully how much of your thinking is your thinking, and I ask you to do your personal work and to know that there's no winning at this. We're not going to all of a sudden be at a certain point and, oh, look, now I don't have to do this anymore. It's a shift in consciousness. I do this for seven generations to come. And that's where we need to be thinking, not just self-gratification right here, right now. Because that self-gratification leads to self-aggrandizement, which leads to supremacy culture, and voila, we're right back where we started, a catch-22.
Not just the what's in it for me, but what's in it for my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. The concept you raised before, I want to come back to it, FAIL, which is an acronym, First Attempt in Learning. And the concept of lifelong learning comes up often in Biggest, Fullest, Brightest. Do you find a lot of us just kind of shut the brains off after we're done schooling?
Yes.
Shortest answer of the day.
And here's why, Jeffrey. Because again, we, big judgment here, we humanity are buying into what the status quo is telling us that we're supposed to be. Meaning, oh, I'm working 60, 80 hours, right? And so I don't have any downtime. Maybe possibly playing video games or going out and maybe having a drink or two with some friends or doing this is the only downtime that I have. Otherwise, I go to this job that I complain about in that downtime with my friends because I've got to be working so hard just to put a roof over my head and food on the table, et cetera, et cetera. And we disqualify sometimes as well within all of that the fact that meeting new people, being curious, being creative, connecting with other people, having that human connection with other folks is all learning. It's not about this hierarchical idea that, oh, you've got to go to college, get this degree. Oh, that's not enough. Now we're going to move that benchmark higher and you got to get this degree to be able to make this amount of money because that material gain, that money, that's what you use to qualify how successful you are because who's defined success and whose definition of success are we using? How much of your thinking is your thinking? So once we get back and start seeing those things more clearly, that me going and opening myself up to be at this coffee shop, to be at this restaurant, to be at this club, to go to somebody else's church or synagogue or mosque or an event that has this or be in the park or whatever and meet somebody new and listen, actively listen to their story, that is learning as well. It's not just academia. It's not just books. It's being open to somebody else's humanity. That is learning as well. And it's loving as well, too.
Particularly in terms of the realms in which we tend to operate, and boy, the world can sure be political at times, and think in terms of us versus them. And you would think that at least for some people, the impulse would be to learn more, to have a thirst for understanding why the people who they see as opposites feel the way they do about them. But more often than not, do you see the movement in the other direction where it's just ratchet down like, nope, we're righter than they are?
And so you're right now, you're explaining white supremacy culture. It is divide and conquer is the most used tool of it. So when we say, oh, we're hugely political or politicized and we're divisive, et cetera, please name it for what it is. That is white supremacy culture. That is what we've been taught from the time that white was used in a law back in 1681 in Jamestown, in the colony of Jamestown, Virginia, right? And that was the first time that white was created and actually laid down in law. It's all based on this lie, right? And we look back at all of these things that we've been fed that is not a truth. These things were put into play, utilized to kill and manifest destiny, and so many different things are crashing through my brain right now and want to come out. But when you said what you said, Jeffrey, it's like that is supremacy culture. That's it in a nutshell. Divide and conquer. Because you have to have one group that wins, one group that's superior to another, that's higher than the other group. That's how supremacy culture works. And so for us to unlearn that, dismantle that, we have to ask ourselves how much of our thinking is our thinking. And it's not so easy. It's not so cut and dry. Because we've based a lot of our goodness or who we are as a person off of it. So then who are we? Who am I at the end of the day if I get rid of a lot of these thought processes? You're a human being, and you deserve your dignity and your right to be a human being. We all do. There's no higher than idea. So heady concept, I think, for some folks, but once you start thinking about it and start feeling it, then maybe you'll have a radio talk show person tell you that you're always up and so chipper. Every time, go up when you meet them.
I meant positive, but you could be positive about being real, and that's really where you've gotten, isn't it? It's about authenticity, being real.
Exactly. And I think a lot of us don't understand what authenticity is.
I'll let that one float, because we're out of time. The book is called Biggest, Fullest, Brightest, Shifting the Consciousness of Humanity. Matthew Reynolds gave us a brain workout this hour. And Matthew, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for doing so.
Always a pleasure, Jeffrey, and thank you again for having me here, and I look forward to chatting with you again soon.